This is a Social Storytellers podcast.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers. Tom. And Leah.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers episode 134. I don't know how I got that so mixed up then. It's 134, Tom.
Wow. We should write it down.
I do write it down, but I don't.
Man, I feel like we've set ourselves up well today.
Do you know what the problem was? We did far too much chatting before we actually started.
We got too casual.
Yeah, that was the problem. I've got so many news stories and they're really fun ones.
Nice. I have three. That's all.
I've done a little bit of watching, a little bit of listening.
I did some listening too. How unusual.
We've got the ears for it, they say.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
I'm a golden god.
Did you want me to make you a slice of toast? Wait, is that from a movie or something?
What we have here is a failure to communicate.
Sorry, I hit the mute button by accident. Did you do a reference just then? I don't know where it's from. What's it from? It's okay. I'll go and watch all the movies and TV shows ever made and see if I can find it. Does this happen to you? You're in the middle of chatting with someone and they say something that's sort of, well, it doesn't quite fit into the conversation. And then they pause and they give you a half smile. Suddenly you realise they've referenced something from pop culture and you've missed it. Worse yet, you've never even heard of it and you feel the pressure to get the reference. In this quick instructional podcast inside this other podcast, we will give you four simple steps you can take to react appropriately when someone references in your direction. Step one, identify the smirk. This is the initial indication that a line from something like The Office or Always Sunny in Philadelphia has been used. Step two, acknowledge the knowing smile with one of your own, accompanied by a slow nod. Step three, avoid the knee-jerk reaction to come up with a reply reference. You've watched maybe 10 minutes of the show 5 years ago. You're not going to be able to come up with a witty response made by Michael once in an episode in season two. Step four, chuckle a little and say either good one or nice and move on with the chat. We hope that these tips will help you out in the next awkward reference-filled conversation. For more, make sure you hit that subscribe button. What, do we want to crack into the news?
Yes, let's not waste any time.
All right. So I saw this morning the trailer for the new Star Wars game from EA. It's called Star Wars Squadrons. Mm-hmm. If you have been wondering what that is, that was the leaked one, Maverick.
Yes.
That the poster came,
yes,
was found somewhere on the internet and it looked like it was going to be, what do you call it, like the dogfighting where you're in like the X-Wing or the TIE fighter.
Yeah, and that's like the old Rogue Squadron game.
Exactly, exactly. And that's exactly what it's going to be. It's set after the Battle of Endor. There'll be both single player campaign and also multiplayer, which I'd imagine the single player's not going to be that long.
No.
It's exciting and fun for people who love Star Wars. The thing that I found interesting is that it's also going to be available on VR. How many people are going to get motion sickness?
Sure.
From flying around in space in all directions?
Yes, you don't have underneath to tether you. Maybe it's that stuff would just be the trench parts.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I don't see how VR works as well without something to anchor you underneath. But I don't know. I don't mess with VR much.
I've never had a turn, ever.
I like AR myself. I like looking through something.
Do you remember back when Pokemon Go started and that was sort of like the AR that everybody had access to and you know, you go, oh my gosh, Pokemon's in my kitchen. Pikachu, I mean.
I'm still messing with the Lego hidden side. That's AR, build the set, and then you scan it up and ghosts come out and all this monster stuff.
Wasn't there a Ghostbusters one as well?
Yeah. There's a Jurassic Park one as well. Jurassic World Alive. It's very good.
That sounds really good. What else have you got story-wise?
So I was very excited because I haven't heard any news about this in years, but there is a new season of the Eric Andre Show that has been filmed and it's nearly finished editing.
Oh.
For comedy.
Wow.
Yay.
That's cool.
Oh, I just want him to go and upset more people. He's so, like, I don't know.
It's his jam.
It is his jam. I don't know if Hannibal Buress is involved. I really hope so because he's fantastic as the co-host, but he's just so clearly over it by this point. No info on when that will drop or anything like that.
But if they're finishing editing, it can't be too far off. It's in the can.
The show is like 80% editing. The joke's... So much of it comes from the editing. So it could still be a while.
Yeah, okay. Those editors better get paid. Mm-hmm. Nice money. Really quick weird thing. So I was on Twitter yesterday and I saw the hashtag She-Ra movie trending.
Right.
And I went, oh, they must be making a She-Ra movie. No, fans are petitioning to have a She-Ra movie, you know, Princess of Power, after the Netflix series.
Yeah.
Finished. Well, the series finale. I haven't watched it, so I don't know the storyline, and I also don't want to give away too much. But apparently, there was a bit of a love story that was going on as part of the back half of the season, and it sort of made the fans want more.
Yep.
So they want that to be the main storyline for the She-Ra movie that is not getting made. Yet. Interesting thing was last month the series creator said, this is a quote, I would love to make a She-Ra movie. I think that would be really cool. I don't know the possibility of that at the moment. And sort of there was mentioning in the quote about how if the fans want it, then maybe that might be a thing that they would start thinking about. So maybe this is a big publicity thing.
Sure.
It's possible.
Might get a movie in
18
to 24 months.
On Netflix, I would assume. I don't think anybody would be angry at that.
Imagine being magically whisked away to Delaware. Hi, I'm in Delaware. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Some music show updates. NBC has renewed Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist for season 2, which I don't know if Mick is still watching, but I know Mick was very much enjoying that.
Yeah, he was loving it. He's a big music fan, though, so...
He really is.
That's a show I was not shocked when he said he liked it.
No, I thought I was going to dig it, but it was not my bag, but I'm very glad it's got season 2 because it's got an awful lot of fans. On the flip side of that, so Perfect Harmony, which is the NBC comedy, the musical comedy, and it's Bradley Whitford.
Is that the one where it's a choir?
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's in a small, you know, he's a Harvard professor or whatever, and he goes to a small town, becomes their, in charge of their choir. I really enjoyed the first season of that. That's been cancelled. So it's not coming back for a season.
That sucks.
It does. I imagine they were paying a lot of money for the music rights because they were doing some very big songs.
Yeah.
And a lot of production and this sort of stuff. So that's a bummer, but it had one season and it did. I quite enjoyed it.
So if you want to see more of Bradley, you will have to watch, I assume, just Handmaids.
Keep watching there. Or
completely different sort of feel there.
Stay tuned because he seems to pop up in at least 2 different series each year.
He's a busy man.
He's a very busy man.
He's one of those actors that you look at their IMDb and there's – because, you know, usually you'll see maybe 1 or 2 things a year. But his IMDb is just like,
he still gets a lot of love from me for Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
He's fascinated with mermen.
That goes back to the Little Mermaid conversation from last week.
Indeed. Solving mysteries.
That's right. Olivia Munn. Now, I quite like her. I think it's because of her role in Newsroom. She played quite a funny, quirky character.
Yep.
So now in my head, that is her personality
as
well. Anyway, she's going to be in a film called Replay. She's producing it as well. It's about how her husband is kidnapped and murdered. And there's like this, there's some sort of tech going on. She's got a plan, and she must do everything in her power to change the past and save him. So there's a bit of time travel going. It sounds interesting, hence the name Replay. That's obviously not happening anytime soon, but it's one to kind of keep in the back burner because that sounds interesting.
Yeah, she's got nerd chops.
Oh, yeah, she does.
I remember her from back in G4 days. That's
right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, Attack of the Show. Mm. Man, why don't we have programming like that anymore? I know that stuff all exists online and there's smaller formats, but that was big. It was like Channel V, but instead having a nerd focus.
And a lot of people came from that as well.
Chris Hardwick, Kevin Pereira.
When a lot of the – was it either – like, I want to say maybe Funhouse or...
Yeah, I think it was them. I don't know.
Maybe Easy Allies. Like those.
A lot of those people.
They all sort of had parts in it, whether they were editing or producing backstage, but that lot of talented people have come from that.
Pretty much anyone that works at any sort of convention circuit, media, circus thing these days of the nerd realm was at G4 at some point. Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Good time.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
There was a lot of stuff revealed for the PS5.
Heaps of stuff.
I will say that it got me more excited than the Xbox reveal.
Me too.
I would hazard a guess that your most excited one was Horizon, clearly.
Horizon Forbidden West.
Forbidden West.
I was waiting for it because I missed the beginning of the conference. It was really super early in the morning for us. And I thought, I'll watch it later. But, you know, I got up and I was sort of making breakfast. I had it on in the background. And I was waiting to hear Aloy, Ashley Burke's voice, because I knew as soon as I heard that would be Horizon.
Yeah.
And sure enough it was. And yeah, west of the continent. So it looks really intriguing. What I enjoyed about the trailer for that is if you haven't played the first game, the spoilers in the trailer, there's no context. Sure. So people who haven't played it will not understand what's happening or what's being spoiled, I should say. But for people who have played it, you're like, I knew that was, it was pretty obvious that that's going to be a continuation, but underwater stuff looked really nice, didn't it? The colors were pretty.
Very funky.
There were a lot of other really interesting games. Apparently 26 games were showcased.
I didn't watch all of them. I probably watched the Spider-Man Miles Morales trailer 26 times though.
I'm not surprised. I did think of you for that one.
Yes.
So that one is still within the Spider-Man game.
Yeah, I'm confused.
But it's getting like up-resed or something for PS5.
I'm confused because they're not saying it's a straight expansion, but it's not an entirely new game.
Yeah.
So it's updoing the recent version and then adding a whole lot more content to play as Miles, which is quite timely for the world right now.
Yeah, that's true.
It's quite one hell of a topical trailer to...
Was it the first one? Apart from the weird GTA thing?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it was a good one to start with.
Well, it's one of the best received games in years.
Yep.
Oh, man, it's so good.
One that I thought was really interesting was the Ratchet and Clank.
I was about to say that's my other one.
Because that was a lot of gameplay that we saw.
And that's Insomniac 2.
I think so, yeah. Those guys are...
Ratchet's a lady now.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
There was a weird one about... Speaking of a lady, she's on a planet and she keeps dying and then getting rid. That was really
confusing.
There
were some weird games in that mix. Some really interesting looking stuff. And as I say, I'm a lot more excited about this than I was the Xbox stuff. I know a lot of people are hanging shit on the design of the PS5. I quite like that.
Same. You know, the only thing I'm not that keen about is the fact that it's white.
Oh, so I kind of like the white, but I rock a lot of monochrome.
Do you know what I would like? I'd like a sort of a really deep, dark purple.
Purple's my favorite color.
Purple and blue are sort of equal first for me.
Okay. Purple-green for me.
Yeah, purple-green's
the
good.
The colors of villainy.
I was going to say that's the Joker's colors. Mm. Yeah, very exciting. Would you go the disc or the digital-only version?
We live in Australia, so we should go the disc.
Yeah, which means we're going to... have to pay more.
Yeah. But like, I don't know. Digital.
You're going to fill up. I mean, you're going to fill up either way.
Yeah, but just then you don't get that sense of ownership. You can't display any of your things. What's going to happen to the collector's editions?
Yeah, that's true.
Where am I going to get these stupid statues of an assassin from Assassin's Creed?
Deacon St. John sort of ripping freakers apart. It also means that, for example, you can't finish a game and then go, hey, Tom, do you want this? I've finished this one.
Yep.
Play it if you want or not.
Yep.
Which, so, yeah.
I'm sure in some markets it's just fine. It's funny. I would have normally said in America it'd be just fine. But as we record right now, America appears to be under some sort of large cyber attack and many, many sites are down or going down or being down.
It's a weird time.
Getting lost in Robert Ford's narrative. You're listening to We Are the Watchers.
I have got a story about The Witcher.
Okay.
Witcher season 2.
Yes.
We heard from the showrunner that season 2 will not have that multi-timeline thing going that season 1 did. It will still have flashbacks and flash forwards though, but I assume they're going to be way more obvious. Because watching The Witcher 1, a lot of people talked about it, it was really confusing because everything felt slightly disjointed. You knew that they were trying to do something with the storytelling style. Mm. And it wasn't until maybe a third of the way through where you're like, These are different timelines. Sure. This happened 20 years ago, this kind of thing. And they all sort of came together towards the end, which makes sense why season 2 would not do it because they're all together. But the showrunner was kind of a little bit, I wouldn't say perturbed, maybe taken aback with how the audience was a little bit confused about it. I think the production team as a whole thought that it'd be very cutting edge, very cool, and sure, that people would understand it. Now, don't get me wrong, The Witcher was great, but there was that sort of, what is going on? And I think because of that, I'm not sure if everybody who started it would have finished that season, just because it's a bit confusing,
yep,
which is a shame that would be the reason why.
You got to stick around in the end and get the song, right?
That's right. I did see
you
some
and that bloody song.
Do you know what song
I sang it to me once here,
I'm
and it
sorry.
Got in my head, and then I went and bought it off iTunes.
I'm not going to sing it. Do you know what I've had stuck in my head for like a couple of days? I'm not even angry because it's really happy, jolly music. Stardew Valley summer music.
Sure.
I'm not singing it for you because I don't want it stuck in your head, but it's nice music to have.
Just going to.
No.
As much as we can do.
That's all my news stories, I reckon. What about you?
That's enough news from me too.
Let's get into the watching.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Oh, by the way, I've got a part two of the quiz. So last week was synopsis based on what I can remember. This is part two. More of them.
Synopsis.
What have you been watching this week?
All right, so I'm going to block them into three things today. Mm. I've got two things that I'm checking in with.
Mm-hmm.
I've got one thing that's brand fresh new, and then I've got two things for you to listen to pop in your ear holes.
Cool.
Yes. We'll start off with some watching stuff. S.H.I.E.L.D., as I mentioned, it's their final season. They knew this going in, so it's going bonkers. Mm. They're time traveling. Previously, they were in the 30s.
Yep.
This week they got sucked into the 50s,
ooh,
which meant they got to cross over with characters from the Agent Carter show,
mm-hmm,
which Agent Carter was cancelled maybe 3-4 years ago now, but that was focusing on Peggy Carter, who is Hayley Atwell in the Captain America films,
yep,
and her storyline of setting up S.H.I.E.L.D. in the 50s and running it. And yeah, during this time when they're stuck in the 50s, they don't run into her herself, but a lot of the main supporting character from the show is the guest character on mm-hmm. this week's episode. And it was just a really cool way of seeing them stitch together things that had happened in the movies,
mm-hmm,
stuff that had happened on this other TV show. And it almost felt like now that everything is transitioned to Disney and they've got Disney Plus and their TV shows are going there, this Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of the last of the Marvel TV shows still going. So it almost feels like they're using this opportunity to wrap up some of these other stories within the universe. So that's very cool. I'm looking to see where that goes. But in terms of paying things off, the most satisfying payoff this week was on the finale for What We Do in the Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
So Guillermo obviously has had quite the character arc coming from where he was at the beginning of being a very feeble, meek familiar. Then he discovered that he's from lineage of vampire hunters. And that's caused a real conflict for the character throughout this season as to staying true to his friends, but also, and you know, his desire to be a vampire, but also the fact that he's really effing good at being a vampire hunter.
Yeah.
So I won't give too much away in terms of this finale because it is, as I say,
I want to watch it.
It's a wonderful payoff thing to things. But the viewing moment of the week for me came, it was the tiniest little moment. Everyone is inside a building where a big party is taking place, except for Guimero.
Oh, fuck Guimero.
He needs to get in there because he's concerned for his friend's safety. He's got info that they don't have inside. Okay. And he can't get in the doors. And the camera crew looks at him and he looks around like this. And as he's looking around, you see his cloak blow open and he's got all his weapons. And the camera looks away behind, like the camera turns around to see what's behind the camera for a second and turns back. And Guimero has scaled the outside of a three-story building. Not like a vampire, but just being a hero.
Climbing
up there. And we see him pull himself over the top. And you hear him heavily breathe. And he looks back over and looks down at the camera and just goes, hell yeah. And it is this tiny little moment, but this pays off so much in-depth character work that has gone into this storyline.
For two seasons.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Oh, man, it gives this guy who you could not at the beginning imagine becoming somewhat heroic. He's like a proper action hero.
There's on his Twitter page, he's actually got some footage of
training
with the stunt coordinators and stunt actors.
He does a fight sequence that is minutes long, just him kicking ass. Mm. And like, I'm really impressed he's got that up because he clearly trained a lot. Mm. He's not a small dude at all. Mm-mm. And the fight style they give him plays into his size.
Cool.
And yeah, just so good. I'm so glad they've already been picked up for season 3.
Oh yeah.
And I feel that they've established this fantastic balance of every episode can be watched in a vacuum and be very enjoyable, but if you actually step back and watch the macro thing, there is a lot going on.
I've heard a lot of people say that at the moment it's their favourite comedy.
I've heard a lot of people say that Colin Robinson might be the best character invented this century.
It is so original, yet so relatable. Like, everybody knows that person.
Everybody knows that person. And weirdly, it is new mythology does not instantly get created. I mean, this we've had Slender Man and maybe The Ring might count.
Do
you know what I mean? We've not had too many mythological creatures established in this time that aren't within a digital realm. So to have the idea of an energy vampire is such a unique concept, but it makes you slap your forehead and go,
how did nobody come up with that before? The show has made me suspect maybe they are real just because you know people like that.
Yep.
You're a vampire? Potentially. Oh, no, I'm so sad that show's ended for a season, but I can now watch in huge chunks. Very excited.
I'm telling you, the Colin Robinson episode this year, it's going to be difficult for anything to knock that off for the funniest thing I saw this year.
That's good, though.
It's amazing.
Worth another watch?
I have already watched it again.
Worth it?
Yeah, really holds up.
I finished another audiobook.
Okay.
I powered through this one called Black Matter by Blake Crouch, and it's about multi-universes and kind of like your butterfly effect as well. This guy, he just a family man, he goes out to get some ice cream for the family after dinner and gets abducted by a masked person who is asking all these questions about his life and his family and his job and everything. And then he's like, I know that voice. Turns out it's him from another universe. And he from another universe, Jason 2, his name is, has invented this box and this drug that allows people to inject it, close the box door, open the box door, and there's a long corridor just of doors and they're all different universes.
Sure.
Oh, man, there's this bit, because it's very action-packed, it's very fast-paced, but there's this bit towards the end that makes you question who is actually the bad guy And potentially people who are bad guys and not bad guys. Yep. It's just a different perspective. And I'm still thinking about, like, I finished probably a week ago and I'm still thinking about, like, man, that is that the whole multiverse and the butterfly effect, like, you do something, you make a decision to turn left. Well, there's another version of you that turned right and you keep branching. And then there's suddenly trillions of you. Oh, so weird. There was an odd bit, though, where there's a character that he meets at some point, and then this character just goes, I'm going to go over here now, catch you later. And I kept waiting the whole way through the book for this character to come back. I never did. So now I'm wondering, did the writer just think potentially that the use of that character was no longer needed, like just get rid of them, or is there another book coming?
Oh, surely that's a comment on the fractured narrative structure of throwaway, you know, if you're doing multiple storylines, you don't have to save the cat.
Well, there was a lot about the cat, a lot about it.
But have I told you about Don't Save the Cat or Save the Cat? Save the Cat is this story telling.
Oh, I thought you meant the cat in the box.
No, not Schrodinger's. Sorry, Save the Cat is a script writing book. And
right.
It's meant to be the Bible on, like, you know, you should be finishing. If you want to write a Hollywood blockbuster, you follow this book because it's all about, you know, don't kill the cat, save the cat. Don't always find the way to give the happy ending, all this sort of stuff. Mm. And like, major storyline structures.
Mm.
But people love to spit in the face of that book because it's the rules. And that sounds like a perfect example of it, of set up a character that feels important,
yeah,
but then the storyline does not need them. So
They're
you don't
gone.
Get them.
They're just gone.
You, as the observer, want it there, but you're not in charge of the storyline, yeah, and the fractured narrative is. That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
It sounds like
it's
a good
not
listen.
Bad. I think I would enjoy it if I read it as well, but sometimes, I don't know about you, but sometimes with audiobooks, my attention will sort of waver in and out but if I read a book, then I'm all attention.
Yep.
So they really have to be specific sort of books that grab me the whole way through if I'm listening.
I listen to Warhammer audiobooks while I'm painting.
Yeah,
and I find that that's a really good one because it's the same deal of every few minutes my mind will wander and I'll come back in, but it's just more dudes in power armor shooting up aliens stuff.
I'm not going to
lose my spot.
No, this one grabbed me the whole time, whether I was driving or walking or just, you know, sometimes, I don't know about you, but sometimes I'll just listen as I'm doing household chores or whatever. Really good. Blake Crouch. What else did you watch?
So I'm going to tell you my two listening things first.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yes. So they're both music.
So I have
things.
To listen to these. Yeah.
It's worth a listen.
Okay.
It's up to you as to whether you do or not. You know, I like my novel. Well, not novelty, but my humorous music. Always going through that. So I have two humorous musical recommendations for you this week. One is there's a new album from Brett Domino, who is one half of the Brett Domino Trio. Which does not make sense. You may have seen these guys if you're in the UK. Hi, Viv. The 8 out of 10 Cats Countdown. They have appeared on that in Dictionary Corner a few times. The best way I can describe it is, and you may have seen them on YouTube. They're two incredibly nerdy looking white guys from rural-ish England who somehow can make really, really funky jams. And they for a long time they just did covers, and they, you know, it's all done with little pieces of tech, and they cobble together different instruments and
clever,
very very clever. But when they put out their albums of original music, it's always funk, and they have a new funk album called Keytar Your Heart, and it has Brett on the front holding his keytar up proudly.
It's pretty cool.
It's got some song. I fell in love with the girl on Checkout 4. Let me be your lunchtime lover, but it has to be a meal deal.
I like that.
Yeah, I'm a bad, bad boy, so I guess I'll be sleeping at the foot of the bed. Just all this. And so it's all very funny stuff about a nervy white guy trying to act like a funky R&B soul singer type thing.
So because it's funk, I know it's a little out of the genre, but I think you could still connect it. Could Matt Berry do something with them?
Oh, very much so. It feels like that sort of thing. But these guys are doing more of a modern funk, yeah. whereas he likes to do the old Scott. The older. But I could definitely see them coming together. The other one that I would love to see Matt Berry with, the album that's come out, is by a guy called Mr. B, the Gentleman Rhymer.
This already sounds like someone Tom would love.
Well, he is one of the first two, and there was a dispute as to exactly who was the first. But he's one of the two largest chap hop artists.
What, this is English, right?
English, yeah. So it's hip hop, but done in the style of 19th century. Yeah.
It's so Matt Berry.
So he plays ukulele and does covers of NWA.
Perfect.
Like the Parlies. his earlier stuff was very covery and jangly ukulele and stuff. His new album is called A Thoroughly Modern Existential Crisis.
Good name.
It's a great name. And there are songs about tweed. There are songs about tea and all the things that you'd enjoy. He has a very, very, very dry wit.
Okay.
If you enjoy his stuff, if you dip your toes into that and you enjoy that, I would happily give more recommendations. There's a guy named Professor Elemental, and the two of them have been involved in a very good-natured chap hop feud for many years. Professor Elemental wears a pith helmet and is themed around like a British explorer.
Oh.
Now, he has a orangutan for a butler. He wears fighting trousers.
Orangutan for a butler. Oh, no. I was going to say it reminds me of Umbrella Academy, Jeffrey. But that was a chimp.
Jeffrey, fetch me my pants. Not those pants. My time traveling pants. Oh, thank you, Jeffrey. Good man. And then he starts rapping. Dear sir, regarding your recent foray into the rap game and the position you portray,
That's amazing.
Very, very intelligent.
I don't know why that, because this is not exactly their music style, but do you remember in the early to mid-2000s, they were American, but Handsome Boy Modeling School?
Yeah.
That so kind of reminded me a bit of...
Professor Elemental is very much that style of he is a cool person pretending to be dorky.
Get you. Yeah.
Mr. B, the Gentleman Rhymer, is a very, very, very dorky person pretending to be cool.
Yeah.
And it's this weird, that's where the knock comes between the two of them.
That's interesting. What a world.
Yeah.
That I didn't even know existed.
I'm so into weird English rap. And the funnier, the better. And chap hop is right up there.
They would be really good if you went and saw them live, but it was the first time you ever heard that album.
It would blow your mind.
And just have the crowd just cracking up with you. It'd be such a good feeling.
Well, it's funny you mentioned about Ron Funches earlier and his compliments and things like that, because these two had a rap battle once, and it took quite a while to start. Please, sir, I insist you go first. And the first minute and a half of the rap battle is them insisting that the other one begin already.
It's like the you hang up, no, you hang up thing.
Yep. But very good. Anyway, Mr. B, the Gentleman Rhymer, and the other one was Brett Domino. You can also check out the Brett Domino Trio.
Yeah, cool.
Very good on YouTube.
That sounds amazing. Speaking of amazing, this was incredibly mediocre.
Ooh.
Called Otherhood. It's on Netflix. It's one of those lighthearted comedies.
Is it spelt like motherhood but with the M crossed out? This ain't your mama's motherhood.
Oh, I thought you were going to have the right sort of tone, but okay, I'm going to start explaining it to you based on who's in it.
Okay, and then I'll see if I get the tone.
You'll understand the tone. So it has Patricia Arquette.
Oh, I'm way off base.
Angela Bassett and Felicity Huffman.
Oh, so this is like more like a First Wives Club.
That's right.
Sisters doing it. Now I've got the vibe.
Yeah. All right. Jake Lacey was in it as well. He was the only
Jake Lacey. Jake Lacey as in Big Teeth Jake Lacey, mm-hmm. right? As in Gary Busey's son.
Last thing I saw him in was in the TV show High Fidelity, but I think the first thing I remember seeing
him. Am I thinking Jake
Girls.
Busey and not Jake Lacey? I am thinking Jake Busey.
Oh, I know who you're talking about, but you know Jake Lacey.
Do I?
Do you not?
I don't know.
Really?
He seems like a Netflix bit player. Because you watch a lot of those shows.
Yeah.
That I don't get to.
I don't know if he's in a lot of Netflix stuff.
I recognize the name. I'm clearly thinking of Jake Busey.
I know who you're talking. Yeah.
Big Teeth, Starship Troopers.
He'd be older than Jake.
I didn't realize we were talking about it. So, yeah, Jake Busey, I reckon, would. I mean, he was about mid 20s, maybe 30 in 99 during Starship Troopers.
Yeah. He was in something recently as well that I've watched, like within the last year.
I don't know why Jake Busey hasn't appeared on Gary Busey Pet Judge yet. Have you checked any of that out?
I haven't seen it yet. You know, I was thinking about it this morning. I was like, this.
After your cat adventures last night, you and your drugged up cat.
Expensive cat. Hilarious. Well, so she was a bit poorly and was in a bit of distress. So I thought, it's 9:30 at night. That's annoying. I just don't want it to get worse overnight. So I called up, went to the vet. They're still doing the COVID thing. So I got to sit in the car for 50 minutes whilst they check her out. Anyway, she doesn't like cars. So on the drive there, which was only 5 minutes, she was like, on the way back after she'd had the painkillers, which, you know, make them sort of like, they're like drunk. She was like this. And I couldn't stop laughing. I'm like, now that I know that you're going to be okay, I can afford this laughter.
Your impression sounds like a dosed up Danny DeVito as Penguin.
Yes. That's very appropriate. In fact, your impersonation was spot on. Oh, shit, so funny. Anyway, that was an adventure. What were we talking about? Don't even remember.
James Corden in Cats.
I don't know if I'm going to watch that movie.
I'm not. Hey, haven't we got a movie we've got to watch for next week?
Yes, we do. We've got to watch Australia, the Baz Luhrmann one from 2008-ish. Because I remember I was working on Breakfast Radio and we got tickets to go and watch it at the local movies. My memory is it was very long.
I made a choice to not review that one.
But we will be reviewing it on the Critic Cave.
That's right.
I think next week.
I think the reason why I chose to was it came out at the same time as about three or four other things I had to cover that week. It was no knock on the film itself.
Yeah, yeah.
I love me Hugh Jackman.
He's having a lot of fun. It's the exact thing that you would think he would like. Colourful, like bright.
Does he get to crack a whip while thrusting his hips? I feel like
probably.
I've seen The Greatest Showman. I know what Hugh Jackman likes to do with a whip.
It's Hugh Jackman in, this is my memory from watching it in 2008. It's Hugh Jackman from The Showman, but acting more like a bloke who's been hanging out in the bush for a long time. So it's
Hugh
like
Stockman.
I'm still a bit of a showman because I got to sing the songs, but I'm dirty. I haven't had a shower.
At any point, does he kick into the mud whilst it's raining?
Probably. That's,
it's got to be. Anyway, the reason why I bring that up is, friends, if you'd like, why not you watch Australia this week?
Yeah. We're going to watch it.
And then we'll do this. We'll do the, it's very exciting. We appear on someone else's podcast.
I know.
And we'll give it a good plug here. And
The Critic Cave.
That's the one I want. We'll jump on that and have a lot of fun. And you can tune in and listen with that.
Hi, everyone. This is Christian from The Critic Cave. My co-host Brian and I review all the major new movie releases and maybe some movies you've never even heard of before. Shortly, Brian and I will be joining Tom and Leah from We Are the Watchers, and we will be reviewing the film Australia. Now, I believe Brian has seen this movie before, but this will be a completely new experience for me, and I cannot wait to dive into it and review it alongside We Are the Watchers. We are super excited to bring this content to both our audiences, and I hope you join us. See you then.
I'm just going to mention very briefly, there was an excellent documentary special, I think, from Comedy Central called This Is Stand-Up. It's an hour and a half. I believe it's mainly it's kind of a half compilation, half fresh clips and things, but it's interviews with many, many, many of the biggest comedians today, just about their art, their craft, and this sort of stuff. And a lot of it are people that have had Netflix specials, and they've clearly been filmed backstage about to go on stage, and they've compiled all this together. But there are, I mean, you've got your Jerry Seinfeld, and he made a fantastic point of the, there's four levels of comedy. There's the, you can make your friends laugh, you can make strangers laugh, you can get paid to make people laugh, and you get paid to make people laugh and they enjoy it so much they imitate your voice. I never really thought about that. That truly is, that's the upper echelon of comedy. You've got your Robin Williams, your Seinfeld, you know, those big iconic people, and it's all because they have an individual voice.
Yeah.
And not just expression voice or like delivery, but the style of comedy they're delivering it and this sort of stuff. So
it become almost caricatures.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It was fantastic to watch that. And then there was George Lopez and a lot of guys from Kings of Comedy talking about how they don't need to be working all the time, but mentally they need to be working all the time.
Yeah.
It's one of those jobs that you hit that high point and you have to continually work at it, because the second you stop, someone else snatches your spot.
Isn't that interesting? Because it's almost like it's totally different for the music world. You release an album and you can't release another album 6 months later and then 6 months later because people will get sick of you. You have to go away for a couple of years and come back. That's interesting.
Yeah, whereas these guys were like, they will tour a place every 12 months.
Yeah.
And some of them will have an entire hour worth of new material every time they roll into town. It was really interesting seeing the different takes, and some people that I haven't necessarily thought of too much, like Jay Moore was in there, who was huge in the 90s.
Jay Moore, I'd have to look him up.
Abrasive, kind of Dennis Leary-ish.
Okay.
But think maybe Dennis Leary, his abrasiveness mixed with hyperactivity of Robin Williams.
Wow, okay. That's a lot.
Jay Moore is a lot, and he's the first person to admit that he is a lot of a person.
Yeah, right.
And his whole thing, which I found fascinating, was that so in the world of comedy, you put together a 2, a 5, a 7, 11, however many minute bits, because when you're doing these open mics and then when you start touring around different places, you will get a 6 minute block.
Okay.
And the light flashes at you at 5:30, and if you're not off at 6, they turn you off.
Wow.
All this is so it's a lot harsher.
Yeah.
And it was him talking about the fact that he'd been so fortunate that he'd progressed through that stuff to the theatre, where once you move to the theatre, that's an hour and a half of you. Whatever. People are paying to see you. They're not going out for a night of comedy. They're going out to see you. He said that his job now is to pinpoint the exact point where the audience goes, fuck, this guy doesn't stop. That's why you get someone like Dave Chappelle, who will go for 4, 5, 6 hours, because he can read that room enough that people are still clamoring for more. He hasn't hit the point of fuck.
I think Billy Connolly does that then. Because I remember the only time I ever saw him live, it was very long, and I remember feeling exhausted from laughing so much, and it was not long after that where he said, anyway, I'm going to wrap up now.
Yep. So it was a really, really interesting thing. And as I said, a lot of it was cobbled together from old stuff. There were some great interviews with Gary Shandling in there, who I miss dearly.
Yeah.
Kevin Nealon has some interesting stuff.
Yeah, right.
There's not any run of like very early comedy. It's kind of 90s onwards and stuff like that. But D.L. Hughley, just a lot of names that were big household names for 2 to 3 years, and then they've parlayed that into the comedy theatre scene and this sort of stuff. I don't know. If you're interested in the looking under the hood of comedy.
Yeah, sounds interesting.
It was very interesting. Sarah Silverman has some great points. This is stand-up.
Also, how does Sarah Silverman not age?
There's a painting, a Dorian's Gray painting, for sure, because it is uncanny. Like, she looks exactly like she did in School of Rock, which was in 2003?
Yep.
And then she still looks exactly the same as stuff from 97. And
there's something there. That sounds fascinating.
It was really good. I really enjoyed it.
I would like that.
Yeah.
Are you ready for a quiz?
I am.
Back by popular demand, what movie is this based on my vague memory of it?
I thought
you did very well last week, so we're going to see how you go with these ones.
All right.
A guy's a pool shark, but on like local basketball courts. Meets a bloke, they team up. His girlfriend asks him to put his mouth where his money is and we all blush.
White Men Can't Jump.
It's amazing because what I did was I just wrote what
you remember?
Immediately remembered.
Sure.
And it was the second sentence that I remembered first. I remember Rosie Perez saying that. They must have put... Yeah, that's. I love her voice. They must have put that in the trailer. They must have.
Side note, I told you I watched that Birds of Prey movie. And I still, I don't know how they didn't have a bit with her going, Harley Quinn, why you get back here?
Oh, wasted opportunity.
Yeah.
I was your bad guy.
I was so happy when she was on the psychedelics doco.
Sure.
I loved her story.
It was a good story. She's a great part of Pineapple Express.
That's right.
She's the cop.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I've got a little time for her. What about this one? I remember everyone was super excited for this. The kid was cute. The movie was too long, especially with the pod races. That part went for about 14 hours.
Phantom Menace.
I had to put the pod racer in because that was the first thing I thought of. It just was very long.
It was very long.
Some people really love that scene.
The pod racing's great. You got Sebulba. He's a dickhead pod racer. There's a lot of good stuff hidden in that pod racing. There's the only on-screen actual canon appearance of Singh. Old school proper canon.
I get you.
Anyway, Phantom Menace.
Phantom Menace.
It holds a place for me. It's not a good film, but it holds, like, I remember being excited to see it.
I was so excited to see it. I think, because I definitely saw it at the movies, and I'm pretty sure me and my friends all were wearing Star Wars t-shirts.
Oh, yeah, I was there midnight.
Yeah. So exciting.
And a robe. Because I did. Jedi robe.
Brown?
Yeah.
Hmm. Did you have a lightsaber or?
Not at the time.
Yeah. Probably didn't want to bring it as well. Like, I'd be worried I'd forget it in the theatre.
Don't take weapons to a theatre.
Fair enough. This one's a quick one. They're zombies. It's nothing like the book.
World War Z.
Yes.
Very good.
That's a good one. Nice and easy. Bit earlier, this is from, I won't tell you. His daughter's getting married and it's going to be at his house and he slowly freaks out and no one seems to care about his feelings because he's just the silly old dad.
It sounds like people are getting Martin Short with him.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Father of the Bride. And he's Frank.
Frank.
Frank. I imagine those movies hold up to a point. I don't know.
Well, I used to love that one.
So did I, but I feel like cancel culture just maybe hasn't watched it yet.
Yeah, probably not. We should watch it before then. Mm. Otherwise, we'll never get to see it ever again. He remember he owned a sneakers company?
Yeah.
Can't remember what his name. Gil. No, Gil was the other one, Parenthood. He was Gil in Parenthood.
Oh, Parenthood, wow.
It's a great movie. All right, we've got two more left.
Mm.
She really likes ballet and really wants to be the lead but goes a bit crazy and thinks she's turning into a bird.
Mm. Black Swan.
Black Swan, yeah.
It's a bit like your multiverse
mm-hmm.
thing from earlier because it's a Black Swan event. You can't plan for that. It's a Black Swan event because no one knew that Black Swans existed.
It was
until they saw one. I love it. That's why the main hatch on Lost was called the Swan. They didn't say it explicitly on the show.
Oh, okay.
It was the idea that energy had never been seen before, therefore it was a Black Swan. No one knew you could manipulate time until someone had manipulated time and couldn't fix it.
And then you knew it was going to happen. Final one.
Mm.
She lives in a crappy district and there's like this ridiculous deadly reality show on TV that people from elsewhere love. She's really good at archery.
Oh, and she puts her hand
yes.
up. Yes. Katniss.
Yep.
Hunger Games.
Yeah, she's the tribute.
Tribute, that's it. Shay has become, Shay was suddenly, Dad, who's Katniss? What? Who's Katniss?
I don't think you've watched. She's a few years off watching that.
I said, where do you know that? She said, I've been watching Princess Rap Battles.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, and Katniss is rapping?
Yeah, she's like, there was one of Hermione against Katniss. And I know all about Hermione, but I didn't really know who Katniss was. And they made a joke about Peter.
Yep.
And
the other bloke, can't remember the other guy's name. The Hemsworth, Liam Hemsworth.
Peter is a future man.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah that's
Josh
right.
Josh Hutchinson?
That's it. Did you read the books? Or did, the Hunger Games?
I haven't watched the movies.
The books are, because I remember watching the movie first, the first one, and thinking, oh, that was all right. And then there must have been a special or, because I remember having the set, the three books.
Yeah.
And I went, I'm going to give this a go. And it was so much better.
I had already, I was working at a critic while Twilight was a thing.
Yeah, right.
And that series. So I had done my young adult adaptation.
Yeah, fair enough. That's work. A shame that you had to do it on Twilight and not Hunger Games.
I didn't hate Twilight to the same level that a lot of my peers did at the time. It was fine. And I completely understood. It was threatening to fandom at the time because fandom was male, you know, predominantly male and this sort of stuff. So to have something coming in that at Comic-Con was taking up a lot of floor space and all, you know, it was a threat. And that was a lot of the negativity around it, I believe, was because it was new, right. Different and enticing a different audience.
Yeah. To go into, like you said, spaces and parts of the internet that potentially they would never have gone to. I read the book first. Someone lent me the book. And yes. I think I've said this before. And it was every chapter was like they would have a conversation and then the next chapter they'd have another conversation but just in a different location. And for me it kind of just dragged on a bit.
Sure.
I don't think I watched the first movie. Maybe the first movie's better. Maybe it's more condensed. But I feel like it's a bit late now to watch it. And enjoy it for, yeah. Wasn't 50 Shades of Grey a fan fiction of Twilight? I think it was.
Maybe. About like
I don't understand Christian exactly how though. Because there's no vampires in 50 Shades of Grey, I don't think. It's just like a real life sort of, it's set in the real world.
I think it's to do with the power dynamic though.
Mm. Well, that was the quiz. I enjoyed it. You got all of those.
Thanks. I just want to say on that last point in that I haven't seen Hunger Games or 50 Shades of Grey.
I haven't seen 50 Shades of Grey.
Well outside the realm of being able to comment on that. I'm sure, though, plenty of our listeners probably fell into the thirst trap that was 50 Shades of Grey. And yep. So if you could correct us, let us know because I don't want to watch them movies and I certainly don't want to read them books.
It's just a big commitment for something you're not sure about.
I'm
and
horny
there's so
enough.
Many other things.
Horny enough.
On that note, Tom, thank you very much.
Sega.